If ever there was a time, the whole world is changing right now. This is the time. This is the time to say, I can turn loose of some of the way things used to be. I can take a fresh look at things. Now, when you're trying to pay your rent and trying to put food on the table, it's kind of a bit of a challenge. So it's a conundrum.
Spiritual awakening is just the beginning. Spiritual actualization is the evolution. I am Will Rucker, and this is Spiritual Actualization. Let's get into it.
Clay, welcome to Candid Conversations.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's great to see you again.
Likewise. So I got your email, and immediately I was like, don't think this is for me, but it's so interesting. And I have to respond. And I'm just so grateful that you had a chance in your schedule for us to talk today, because I just,
absolutely,
with everything going on in our nation, it is so vital that this subject receives some attention and some light. There are good things happening, and the world is not as bad as it may seem.
Boy, I hear you. I just sent the message out to my men's circle, to the mail list. And last week was a hard week, I said. And I went from, you know, going within to realizing that I was isolating and that I was not talking. And I said, oh my gosh, I'm ghosting here at home. We're not realizing just how much of an impact all of this stuff is happening, and that's happening is having on me.
It's interesting that we do that, that we step back and isolate, and then that's when the aha can come. Of course, you have to be somewhat self-aware to even hear that aha. But it is there, even if it's very, very faint. So,
well, I caught myself just going there and just stuck.
Yeah,
you know, I'm typically pretty up, and you know, but I realized that I had lost sight of gratitude.
Wow!
And
before we get too far into this conversation, I want to give people context around the work that you're doing. So, if you could share really quickly about that.
Sure. Well, I have an organization called the Men's Fellowship Network. I started it 8.5 years ago, and I started it because I realized that I didn't have trust for other men, and there was only one way I could get there, which was face it. And so I figured if I'm in this situation, then other people are this way. I've seen, you know, a lot of guys are coming up from a recovery program, and they're looking to go to another place, the next level higher. But they're not going to go back to church because they got burned on organized religion, not realizing, you know. And they can speak just so deeply with their spouse or their partner. So the other is to speak with another man, but we don't trust each other. And so the guys are stuck right here in the middle, and it's festering. Will, we're dying because of this, and it's causing all kinds of problems. And so for me, I needed to have this open here, a safe place where I could talk with other men and learn how to go head to heart, find the vocabulary to speak from the heart and practice it in a safe space, in a kind of contemplative setting where there's no judgment. And we get do-overs, you know, and learn, find the vocabulary that we haven't developed from here. And to get that affirmation, and we get 18, 20 guys in the circle.
Wow.
It's really interesting how close we can really become.
That's a pretty good
I could go on and on. Well, we run circles from 18 to 35.
Wow.
And in early March we switched over to Zoom, and I thought, well, it's gonna drop off. It didn't. Some guys that haven't been able to come because of the traffic in Austin, they're now on. So I'm seeing some faces I hadn't seen for a while.
That is wonderful. And the technology hasn't been a barrier at all then.
Mm-mm. You know, there's something that's really interesting that we find that you'd think that many men, that people are trying to get a word in edgewise. But we've realized when somebody says something, there's a pause and there isn't this need to fill and tell my story and let it soak in. And we had been talking about holding sacred space. And I guess the week prior, and we were in a circle and we were really going deeper and deeper on, I don't remember what the topic was, but it was so mindful. And at one point, it just ebbed into a silence. And we sat there for 4 or 5 minutes and nobody said anything. Nobody felt like they had to jump in until finally one guy said, "What just happened?" And somebody said, "Well, I was holding space for you." Another fellow said, "Well, I'm holding space for you." Well, another guy said, "Well, you know, I do that every day." And then another guy says, "Well, at 11:11, why don't we all do it?" And so we all set our iPhones or our Androids for 11:11. And now every day at 11 o'clock or 11:11, chime, I pause for a moment. And I know my fellows that are in the circle, they're pausing too. Just for a few seconds. Maybe there's a text that flies, but I know somebody's got my back. And I grew up not having a network like that. And that's been the benefit of us over this past 8 years to be able to get together and to connect on that deeper level.
That's so important. In that space that you're talking about, that silence, for me, I've been really pondering how quickly we communicate now, the instant messaging, the, you know, text messaging. You post a comment on Facebook and then 30 seconds later, you've got 10 replies and you have to try to respond to, you know, 10 different viewpoints. And it's just so fast paced that we don't even give ourselves space to truly process, to pause, to think. Do you think that the fact that people are moving so quickly in the way that they respond to each other, do you think that that's hurting us, or what are your thoughts?
It's a double-edged sword. You know, at last count, I only had 4,200 friends on Facebook.
Only 4,200?
So theoretically, if I was really connected with them, I've taken my intention and I've diluted it 4,200 times. So my ability to move forward with intention, it's so diluted, like I said. So there's a balance between what we're tending to do and then being isolated, you know, being alone. So there's a balance, and I think picking your friends, cultivating friendships, cultivating a network of you know, common ground that, and they don't have to be in the same town. I mean, you and I've met and we've got compassion, Charter for Compassion, you know, just by that we're connected. And, it doesn't take but just a few words to say, okay, you know, yeah.
So you mentioned the big word, which is compassion. And mm-hmm. Of course, anyone that follows anything I do knows that compassion is really the heartbeat of everything that I do. And for me, what I have discovered is compassion isn't just feeling bad. You know, it's not just being aware, oh, bad things are happening or there's suffering in the world, but it's really that thing that causes us to want to act. And each of us has this innately, the way that it is expressed, I believe, you know, needs some maturing and some training a bit. But all of us have this desire to alleviate suffering. Right now, I'm seeing us become so divided over how we alleviate suffering, and then even further over what suffering even is at this point. Have you seen in your men's group an awareness that, you know what, my experience isn't the same as everyone else's. There may be others suffering in a different way that I'm just not conscious of, or is it pretty uniform in the thoughts there?
It's all over the map. Some of the fellows are just shell-shocked. You know, it's like, I don't know what to do. And for a privileged white male, you know, it's the gender, you know, and the rise of the divine feminine. And now with the race side, when George Floyd was murdered, you know, May 25th in the evening time between 8 and 9 o'clock. Well, we were having our men's circle right then, and we didn't know about it. And I woke up the next morning to see the news, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, our topic that night was aspirations. What are your aspirations in life? And I thought to myself, gee, what was George Floyd's aspirations? And, you know, a couple of weeks later on Facebook, his second grade school teacher showed up, and she had one of his projects, because she kept all the kids' projects through the years. And you know what the project said? That George Floyd's aspiration was to become a Supreme Court justice.
Wow.
Where did things go wrong? You know, what is the institutional issues that are happening, the cultural issues that are happening that play out on the street where there's not a person on the street, white or black, whatever, that isn't wounded? You know, we're bringing that woundedness together, and it's not helpful, you know. And to be able to come into that with a sense of compassion for everyone, it's a tall order. People are in fear, and fear in that lower level of consciousness, you know, their fight or flights, their thinking and reasoning is shut down. Yeah. Physiologically, you know, it's the bolt. And so you have people off balance like that, and now we're trying to make decisions. It's not good. Step back, find that pause. And then just listen. You know, what is it? I was given two ears and one mouth. You know, seek to understand, and then seek to understand, and then to be understood. Some of those basic things, you know, to me, that's where right now what you and I are doing is a gentle reminder out there. You know, we'll touch so many people, but that ripples. It's kind of like the butterfly wing of compassion.
Yeah, no, you mentioned quite a few very, very important points. So I'm appreciative of your heart and your approach to it. The big thing I want to dive into for just a moment is fear. And yeah. You hit the nail on the head. Fear shuts down reasoning and logic, and it causes us to respond in a way that doesn't necessarily always provide the ideal long-term outcome. And When I look at someone operating in fear, they're thinking more in that present, which of course, you know, biologically, that's how we're designed. Like, you got to survive the present to get to the future. But the traumas that we're facing now, I'm careful in the way I say this, because they are life and death, but they're not immediately life and death in the way that, you know, years ago, a tiger jumping on you would have just been over. So it's a bit different, but we're still responding in the same way. Instead of processing and allowing ourselves to, as you said, understand and then seek to be understood, what I'm most concerned about, well, several things, but one of the things I'm most concerned about is the fact that we are really seeing two or more very, very different realities in our one nation. And for me, that's hard because I have friends across the entire spectrum, from far, far radical left to far, far radical right, everything in between, and all those with no affiliation. I mean, you name it, I'm friends. So I'm also part of groups, like the Facebook groups. Some of them are private, some are public, but whatever the case is, you will feel a little bit more open in the smaller group setting, and people that I just did not expect certain things to come from, they are saying things mm-hmm. that are so hurtful and so surprising. When I look at the Jacob yeah. Blake situation, I'm seeing memes basically celebrating the fact that he was shot, and then going further to yeah. the vigilante that came out and then murdered people. Well, let's raise money and praise him. It's like, guys, can we pause? Can we really
That's
take
right.
a moment to look at this and reason through this? Yes, we're all dealing with pressure. We're all dealing with stress, and we're all afraid to a degree. So let's stop. Mm. Let's pause
yeah.
and let's process.
Yeah, that's so true. What comes to mind, you were talking about far right and far left, was a term that I think Carl Jung coined, and I learned it in some of my work with an organization called Gender Equity and Reconciliation International. And that term is holding the tension of opposites. You know, you and I could just beat the crap out of each other, your idea, my idea, and we're not going to change each other's minds, and we can expend all that energy that way. Or we can recognize and hold the fact that your thoughts are this way, my thoughts are this way, and hold that, honor that. I hear you. You hear me. And then let's look up. Where is that common point up that we can both aim at together? That's the common ground up there. And bring our diversity pointed up towards that together. That to me, and maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but to be able to do that, you know, it's easy to say, it's hard to do, especially in the moment when one is in fear.
It is. So where do we go? How do we get to that point?
As they say, that's a $64,000 question. You know, I tell you what I've learned with the guys, and me included, is that, you know, I'm in fear and things are not good. And I think, but I'm going to make a difference in the world. And I go and I look out there and I thought, I can't make a difference. So I go back down and it's unhealthy. I'm stuck, you know, but if I can begin to learn how to have a little compassion for myself and bring that compassion into the world to begin to make change, that's where it's at. Well, that's great in theory, but who am I to change the world? I'm just one guy. And I'm reminded of the old starfish story. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
The little boy's on the beach, and there's 1,000 starfish. And he's picking up one, and he's tossing it out there. And he picks up another one and tosses it back. He's saving them one at a time. And this old man walks up and says, "Son, you can't make a difference here." The little boy picks up another one, tosses it out. He says, "I made a difference to that one." Sometimes that's all we're there to do, to show up differently, because we've got no idea the impact we have on people. It may be verbal impact or just our presence or what you and I are saying. Somebody's over here that we don't even know they're there. We're having an impact. And so if I'm showing up whole and complete, if I'm showing up with a compassion mindset, I am making a difference in the world. It doesn't always have to be tangible. It doesn't always have to be verbal. But we do our part. You know, I was childhood dreams. You know, we grow up, we push them away, but they come through. And they're based on our innate, you know, who we really are, you know. And somewhere, somehow, those dreams are going to play through. We had an exercise one time that says, write them down and then make a big circle around them and talk about, you know, what were your big accomplishments in life so far? And then see if you can connect the dots. You know, for example, I wanted to be a doctor. Well, I failed. I turned out to be a fireman. Well, did I fail? My dream was to save lives. And if you really do that exercise, you'll start to realize, and when that feeling of, oh, it's connected, that visceral feeling, that fuzz that happens, that's your body telling you, this is the divine nature of what I'm supposed to be doing. This is where my purpose is. And it's going to come back one way or the other. You know, for me, I wanted to always express from the heart. Of course, you know, push that down, put that away. You got to be go be a Marine, go off in business, do these things. Well, it lasted until I was about 53, and I had a mystical experience, which included having a heart bypass, 5 of them.
Wow.
Yeah. My heart was saying, Clay, listen to me. Listen to me. And, well, I just run myself down. And I really was lucky, was really fortunate, and I came out fine. But, you know, it was right after that I began to ask myself, you know, I was officing in New York City at the time, and my office was on Park and 32nd, and I went up to the top of the Empire State Building after I'd had my bypass and I had some recovery time. And I went up there, and I could see my little window way down there, and I thought, metaphorically, I've made it to the top. I'm at the top of the Empire State Building. It's almost killed me. I've been depressed. I've been hollow. I've had this burning inside of me. Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? And that's really where my journey began, leading up to the men's circle, leading up to what I'm doing today. And, you know, in 2018, I left the business world. I had another little heart reminder happen, and I was fine. But I said, you know, talking with Laurie, my wife, it was, how many more times is my heart going to have to tell me to get on purpose? If not now, when? Who's to say this isn't my last day, and am I on purpose? And so I took a leap of faith, and almost 2 years ago now, and things began to unfold and unfold and unfold. Yeah, just all the things that happened in 2019. I had 35 experiences over at the Parliament, the World Religions. I worked in Kenya, you know, on and on and on. You know, one of the things up there that at the Parliament that I was invited to do is write the Men and Boys Initiative for the Charter. And because I was talking to Charlie Barker, and I said, you know, Charlie, I kind of go at it differently. I'm more of a contemplative. You know, a lot of the men's groups are, you know, like, let's beat into the guy and break him open, which a lot of guys need that. But there are other guys that are in their heart already, and they're stuck. And my approach was more contemplative. Create a nurturing place that they can go safely and learn how to then come out like that. But yeah, that was an incredible year. You talk about providence. You know, as soon as I got aligned, you know, what my mission was and what my purpose was, then it just blossomed. Yeah.
I just feel the feels on the inside hearing you share all of that.
It only took me 65 years to learn that.
I'll never do so. You're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, that's true. It's, yeah. Every moment is an opportunity.
You mentioned holding things in tension and then the starfish story. And one of the things that really, really sparked in me during that time was it's important to affect the one. And we have to be mindful that there are systems and structures in place that are affecting the many. And we need to address those as well.
Yes.
A lot of times we're missing the both and approach. But the other thing that you really sparked was when you said, you know, my actual dream was to save lives. Mm-hmm. And just reframing that, I think for so many people is going to be such a huge blessing, because in this day and age, you know, so many have lost their jobs. So yeah. many are seeking a purpose. They're like, well, you know, I realize I'm mortal now. Like, time's not always going to be here. Mm-hmm. What is my purpose? And you just opened up, not even just a window, you just opened up the entire roof to say there are so many different paths you can take to fulfill your dream. It doesn't have to be that label you thought it was going to be. It can be one of these many, many paths, and you can still fulfill that childhood dream, that purpose you were placed in this planet on this time for. So,
if ever there was a time, the whole world is changing right now. This is the time. This is the time to say, I can turn loose of some of the way things used to be. I can take a fresh look at things. Now, when you're trying to pay your rent and trying to put food on the table, it's kind of a bit of a challenge. So it's a conundrum.
And that goes back to that immediate fear response. Yeah. What's happening right this moment, which I think as a culture, we haven't done a great job with helping people to think long term. I just think because we've had such abundance and, you know, in my generation, like I grew up with TV and internet and, you know, microwaves and all of those things. So for me, I'm like, what do you mean it takes an hour to do this? It doesn't. Here, just do this. You know, so it's a lot faster pace. But when I think of like my great grandmother, who passed at 98 this summer, she grew up before sliced bread. You know, so that's the time frame she's in, and it's just a different world. So when I'd spend time with her, she would still heat up things in the oven and on the stove, which was her way. It took longer, but it was her way. So it's just, I think, important to keep in mind that part as we're looking at how people are making their decisions. The other thing I'll add is that with time travel, like I'm kind of one of those guys that thinks about weird things sometimes, but anytime you see a movie with time travel, whenever they go back in the past, they always harp on, don't change anything. Any tiny thing you do can change the entire future. So my question is that applicable today? Are our tiny actions today able to completely shift the future?
I believe they are. You know, back to the butterfly. If you take it from a business perspective, there was a famous businessman, very highly successful, I won't name his name. But he said, successful business is a series of mistakes and corrections. So we learn through our mistakes. You know, learn from the past. Don't forget the past. If we forget the past, we're going to repeat it. And I'm afraid that in some ways, that's what's happening right now. You know, you have people that are in pain and they're crying out and they're protesting. Hear me. Hear me, you know, and it's touching things off. And because the people that need to listen aren't listening. So they're going to yell a little bit louder, you know, that's how change happens, how radical change happens. And now we have to be going through this. And, you know, to tell the people, well, just tone it down. Just talk to me like a regular person, right? Well, I've learned in some of my work, I've got a workshop that I'm doing right now on racism in America. I learned a new term. It's called tone policing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not talking to me in a way that I like to be talked to, so I'm not going to listen to you. Aside from the fact that that person is expressing themselves, they may be flailing about it, but that's saying something, and we have to be at a place of compassion. And to know that inside, from all that flailing, inside there is a golden spark of light, you know, the divine energy in each one of us, and all of the things that have gone around that's put us all in this place right now, we're reacting to that. And that's what I learned as a prayer chaplain, to hold space for somebody. They may be going off right now, but I know that the truth of the matter is down there, right inside, that they're a child of God just like I am. You know, my presence calming, perhaps we can begin to see that, not to fix anybody, but just to recognize that we can reintegrate that divine spirit.
Yeah. I think the work that you do with the men in your group makes what you just mentioned possible. It is so easy to be riled up. And if someone is speaking to you in a way that is outside of your cultural norms, yep, it can feel very aggressive. And for them, they're like, oh, we're just having a conversation, you know, but it's that you don't know when you don't know. And so giving people that space, and I heard you say assume positive intent, where you said, you know, find that golden spark. To me, mm-hmm, that's the principle of just assuming that something positive is coming out. Yeah. Because a man on fire isn't going to say, you know, excuse me.
Nope.
No, it's like, hey, I'm on fire.
That's right.
And for you to also segue, gaslight, you know, gaslight and say, you're not on fire. You're just, you know, I'm on fire. Just because you're not on fire and you haven't seen people like me on fire before, it doesn't mean my experience isn't real. Yeah. You know, so I'm seeing a lot of people, and I wonder if it's a defense mechanism, like how you talked about going into isolation. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the denial of the fact that systemic racism is even a thing, that America does need police reform, that there is police brutality, that there is racial discrimination and enforcement. Yep. I wonder if denying that those things are real is one of the ways people isolate, and they're kind of isolating in a group, but I don't know if I'm making sense yet. But
you are, absolutely. You know, we're expected to have the answers. Mm-hmm. I was raised to have the answers. I'm raised to fix it. But this is coming at me, you know, from a totally different direction. I someone called me a white supremacist. You know, the book was tossed to me, Me and White Supremacy. And that's actually the book that we're using in our, there's half a dozen of guys that we're going through that.
So I want to pause right there. Did you discover that you actually were a white supremacist?
Yep. Now, the rest of that story is, the fish in water, asking what water is. So new vocabulary. Do I have white privilege? Well, what's white privilege? I'm not privileged. I had to work my butt off. Oh, no. When you go out on the street, you look over your shoulder. How often do you look over your shoulder? Well, I don't look over my shoulder. That's white privilege. You know, white fragility. You know, that's when I go into fear. We talked about tone policing. You know, all of these things is what we're learning about, what I'm learning about, and recognizing that in the definition of white supremacy, I do have the upper hand by nature. I didn't realize it. I took it for granted. And one thing also that I get into conversations about, because I went through this, okay. So BIPOC, you know, oh gosh, you know, people of color, indigenous, you know, for them to rise up in the world, that means us white people have got to go down. No, that's not the message. You know, we're here. We bring up together. You know, this isn't a finite, pie. It's not just this. We make the pie bigger and everybody wins. Now, getting that concept across, when people are in fear. They're in fear because they don't have the answer. They're expected to have the answer, and they go in and they back up. If I don't have the answer, that means I might get beat down. I might lose my house, you know. And so they go far enough, then they're going to defend themselves. And they're defending themselves on a wrong premise. And, you know, being a privileged white male, I was doing this gender equity and reconciliation work. It's just deep healing between men and women, finding a safe space to recognize and honor that both men and women are wounded by the patriarchal system. You know, and again, oh, you're a white male, you're not wounded. Well, yeah, we all are wounded. And honoring that and using that as a common point of departure, you know, or to move forward, recognize, not to compare whose wounds is worse, and that's not what it is, but we're just wounded. That's our common ground. And so going through that, and I've gone through some pretty extensive training with that, you know, getting that hitting me and begin opening my mind to say, okay, I do need to look at this differently. Unknowingly, innocently, I've had the privilege and I've done things that have diminished the woman in the world. Okay, so I'm getting that and I'm adjusting there, and now we're talking about race. And again, I'm the elephant in the room. So I'm getting it from both sides like this, right? I don't have the answers. I'm showing up to try and figure out why. And that's part why you and I are talking today. You know, it came to mind this last period of time, especially this last year, that I really believe that there's a new compassionate male rising up. That all of this energy, call it the divine feminine energy that the men have had to push down so long, you know, they're deluding themselves. Integrate that. And I believe that there's, like you said in the very beginning, there's more good going on in the world than bad. There's a lot of good there. And a lot of it is these men who are saying, oh, integrate, you know, compassion, understanding what that is. They may not have that vocabulary, but that's the essence of what they're doing. And I really, truly believe that there is what I call a new compassionate male that's rising in the world. And I really believe that that's a new archetype. That's the new archetype, you know, king, warrior, magician, lover. Yes. The common thread amongst all of those is compassion. And that's why I've got my podcast called In Search of the New Compassionate Male. And that's how you and I connected. And I've got a vision that all of us who speak of compassion or have compassion woven into the fabric of our podcast, men and women, that we put together a network where we lift one another up like you and I are doing. And I call it the Compassionate Male Podcasting Network. You know, it's just a place for us all to touch in and help one another out. That way my one voice is multiplied. Your one voice is multiplied. And we are making a difference.
We are making a difference. That, yes, 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 we are. And you actually just gave me a new insight and a deepening into the white male experience, which I have been aware of on the surface. But the way that you broke down the different pieces of really the assault on the white male identity, mm-hmm. I was sitting there thinking, wow, you know, that's hard. But that, for me, finding out that that's hard or recognizing that that's hard gave me a place of mm-hmm. common ground to say, you know what, your experience in this way, it mirrors my experience.
Right.
Where, you know, it's black and white, literally.
That's right.
But we still can find that common ground in life's hard.
And we're both in pain. we're both wounded. You know, this, the institutional things that have got to change, they've affected us both. And as we connect and recognize our humanness together and recognize and honor one another's woundedness, that I think is a, is the root of real change.
Yeah. And it's not expecting for us to get it exactly right every time. I mean, I think that that's unrealistic. Well, it's clearly unrealistic because we're not doing it. But it's one of those things that I think is an artificial barrier that doesn't have to be there. I don't need you to get the language exactly right when it comes to the Black experience. I don't need to get the language exactly right when it comes to, you know, the female experience. It,
right.
What we should look for is the essence or the spirit. What's the heart behind this communication?
Yes.
I think the scripture, I spent most of my life studying the Bible. And for the first part of my studies, it was really memorizing scripture and learning the Greek and the Hebrew and all of these very technical pieces. Mm-hmm. And for most of my Christian journey, I missed the entire point. And I was a great theologian, but I was a horrible human being. And it's because I was looking at the letter and not the spirit behind it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I've said several times that it's not whether or not the bush burned or not. It's what's the message? Yeah, I had to cross that bridge along the way too. Yeah.
But that sparks for me the idea of identity. And anytime we're told you're wrong about that, what we hear a lot of times is, I'm wrong. Something's wrong with me. I'm inadequate. And so I have to defend myself. No, my worldview is not wrong. My view of the Bible is not wrong. My interpretation of this event isn't wrong. Because if I'm wrong about this, then I'm wrong. You know, and that's hard for people. Instead of taking a step back and using it as an opportunity to say, wow, let me examine this from a different perspective. Let's see if we can both grow here. If we start approaching it that way, I think we can bridge a lot of these divides and avoid that isolation that comes from feeling, well, I'm under attack, let me retreat. Because, you know, you have the fight, but there's the flight, and that's that isolation piece. I'm going to leave the situation, take myself out of the equation. Mm-hmm. But we can't afford for people to take themselves out of the equation. Mm-hmm. Behind me is a book called Go Together, and it's based on the principle of Ubuntu, which means I am because we are. Mm-hmm. And so I need you to be doing the work that you're doing, Clay. I need you to do it. And I need those on different sides to be doing exactly what they're doing so that we can all come together and create the full human experience. It's so vital that we each stay in the game and don't just give up and say, you know, this is too much. I hear a lot of people saying right now, 2020 is just too much. No, it's not, because you're still here. You're still present. So it's not too much yet. And don't tell yourself it's too much. You're stronger than you think. You're more resilient than you know. So keep in it and connect with people that can undergird you and support you and uplift you and encourage you, because we need that sunshine just like we need the rain.
That's so true. And, you know, you were talking about getting things wrong. And I attach, that's shame.
Shame, yes.
You know, I am bad versus I did something bad, as Brené Brown says. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I'm learning this about white privilege and what have you, my immediate was to go into shame. That's the lowest vibration, you know, and that touches off all kinds of unhealthy things. But this isn't an indictment of Clay Boykin. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity to learn and to be curious. You know, this is not about shame. This is about being curious and learning and expanding my base of understanding and knowledge. I'll wrestle with some of it. I always will. You know, we all will. But there's a whole new body of knowledge since May 25th that has come into my world. And I'm not one to turn loose until I've got it sorted out for what fits for me. And gosh, if everyone would just recognize, this isn't about shame. it's about curiosity and learning.
That's so good. In our last few minutes, I want to talk about that, Shane, because it's such, for me, that's another aha moment there. Mm-hmm. The shame avoidance. People know that it's kind of this weird paradoxical state that we're in, where we know how awesome and wonderful we are, and then we also doubt it at the same time. It's this constant, the tension, the struggle between the two. But right. What I'm seeing when we look at the history of our nation, a lot of people are fighting for the identity of America and avoiding some of its atrocities. And I think that it may actually be avoidance of shame in that regard. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. You know, that's our nature, is to, you know, move away from that, to push shame down. And we cannot walk away from our history. You know, what is it? The history's written, the history books were written by the victors. And to really understand the whole story, to really is to be able to move forward. I'm a former Marine. I salute the flag. It means something to me. The symbolism of the flag means something to me. Well, I can tell you something. The last couple of years, and especially right now, when I drive down the main street and there's this big garrison flag flying that I used to sit up a little bit higher in my chair, it's taken on a little bit different meaning. And I'm not sitting up quite so high. You know, it's like, oh man, this flag isn't quite as white and starched and clean as we thought it was. But that's okay. Let's go take and let's learn from all that. What a rich opportunity to learn and then do better.
So just in a nutshell, how does one overcome the temptation of shame? How do you get beyond that pull?
I can only speak for myself. And not going it alone. Developing the relationships. There's work that men have got to do with men. There's things that you and I can talk about that I can't talk about with my wife. I mean, yeah, intellectually, but she'll get it. You know, and to be able to build those relationships, I never had those relationships growing up. And the more that we can have those kind of relationships with one another, good intentioned men who are attempting to be compassionate, who are making that move on their journey, what we recognize is that we aren't the only person who carries shame about this one thing that I did. Oh, I'm not the only person in the world. Oh, you have that. Oh, well, that begins to open up, to let that out in a healthy way. Throughout my life, without a men's circle, I was on my own to sort that out. And that was fraught with anxiety, years and years of clinical depression. So don't go it alone, to me, is the fundamental.
I could talk to you all day. I have to wrap up. But what you just said, I think, is really the key to everything that we're dealing with, whether it's the political side, the police side, whatever it may be. It's really the idea that we should be human together.
Yes.
And I think that, at least in my experience in the churches I was a part of, I wasn't allowed to be human. Mm-hmm. And we were all pretending to be things we weren't together. Right. And we were all so broken and literally dying inside, because we didn't know that the person sitting right next to me is dealing with the exact same thing.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
So I want everyone that has been watching, please go and connect with Clay. He's phenomenal. His podcast is absolutely amazing. And he's becoming a fast friend in my life. Clay, how do people connect with you?
Certainly. Very easy. Go to my website, which is clayboykin.com. That's B as in boy, O-Y-K-I-N, clayboykin.com. You can connect with me there. That's the simplest way to do it. You can get to my podcast. You can get to my email list. You can get to my men's circle. I've got lot of resources that are there for the benefit of everybody.
Perfect. ClayBoykin.com, and I'll put it in the little description box too so they have it. Again, thank you for your time, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Will.